Hello, and welcome to the Brown Right Podcast. Hey! This podcast is all about what it means and what it takes to be successful in advertising when you're from a different ethnic or socio-economic background than the majority. Hello, and welcome to Brown Right Podcast. Before we start today, I just want to mention two quick but important things. Firstly, thank you to my friends Dan and Nick at Smith & Weston, who co-create and produce the podcast. They are the masters of sound, so if you need sound for radio, TV or any of your sound production needs, please keep Smith & Weston in mind. Okay, and secondly, big news. We have a sponsor, a really awesome one. The B&T Changing the Ratio Conference is an event that's very close to my heart. It's an annual celebration of diversity in the media, marketing and advertising industries that really drives things forward. It gets us together to explore ways to overcome biases, gender, cultural, age, disability and more, and to create a more effective, inclusive and innovative communications industry. Last year I was privileged to be on a panel and attend for the whole day. For me, it was one of the most inspiring days of 2019. This year's Changing the Ratio conference is on the 13th of May at the Foxtel venue on Oxford Street in Sydney, which is handy for me because it's just 5 minutes from my house. The theme is belonging. So I urge you all to come along. You can get tickets and all the info you need at changingtheratio.com.au. And to sweeten the deal, Brown Right listeners get 20% off. Simply use the discount code BROWNRIGHT and don't say I never give you anything. But seriously, please stick it in your diary and make sure you come along. You'll be part of moving the industry forward and firmly on the right side of history. Right, today we have two guests, Jasmine Sabrata and Ava Frawley. They're two young copywriters at Ogilvy. Jasmine's from Indonesia. Ava's a fourth generation Australian from country Victoria. Last year they created the Changing the Face initiative, an ongoing project which is mapping the changing face of our industry as a gauge of our diversity and personality. So we'll talk a bit about that today. Also, the podcast has focused so far on creative leaders. I thought it'd be really interesting to talk to guests who are nearer to the start of their careers. So welcome, Jazz and Ava.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
Pleasure. So, yeah, how we always like to start these is, could you tell me just briefly a little bit about both of your backgrounds?
Okay, cool. So I was born in Melbourne. I lived in the UK for a few years, but I grew up in Victoria. My parents are both from the country.
Okay. How about you, Jazz?
I was born in Jakarta, and I was raised in a city outside called Tangerang. I am part Chinese, part Indonesian, although I'm like fourth or fifth generation Chinese. So I identify mostly as Indonesian, even though we celebrate both cultures equally.
And then how about the industry itself? How did you guys, or ladies I should say, how did you get into the industry? How did you meet? Did you meet at Ogilvy or was it before then?
We actually met at the Brief to Broadcast competition where this sort of all started, where the idea originated. So I was interning at the time in the Melbourne office and Jazz was working in the Sydney office. We sort of first met there and became friends. I moved up to Sydney shortly after and started working at Ogilvy as a copywriter as well.
And then just to be clear, you kind of both worked together on the Brief to Broadcast brief, and that's where you came up with the Changing the Face idea.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, cool. And then how about specifically getting into the industry and sort of and kickstarting your career? Would you say that it was any more difficult for your male peers, or you know, how would you gauge that?
I wouldn't say that it was more difficult. I'd say that it's different. I was branded very early on as a female copywriter or a female creative, which I don't think my male peers had the same experience. And whether or not being a female creative is a good thing or a bad thing, that really depends on who I'm talking to or who's working with me and who's hiring me. It's definitely different. The work that I get sometimes can be more female oriented, which is fine, but that might mean that maybe I don't get work that's more male heavy or male dominated.
What do you mean? Do you mean by female copywriter? Do you mean like the cliched female products like your tampons and that kind of thing versus your car brands?
Sort of, yeah. It's more in Jakarta maybe than in Sydney, but everything that I do sort of is seen in the lens of being a female writer.
Yeah, okay. And do you find that frustrating? Have there been times when there's briefs where you think, oh, I would love to have a crack at that, but it's gone to a male team for, you know, whatever reason?
Well, I can't really say why I don't get certain briefs. Maybe it's a hunch that I have, but it's neither good nor bad because I have the privilege of working on brands that are pretty cool as well. But I think it's just being labelled as a female creative is different.
What do you think, Ava?
Yeah, I think for me the challenge wasn't so much getting into the industry. I think, from my experience anyway, I think we have at a junior level quite a diverse range. But it's sort of definitely when you get into the mid-weight and senior positions, you see that drop off. So I think for me, yeah, it's more the progress and keeping diversity sort of, keep it going up.
Yeah. And do you mean that you find that the progress of more diverse mix of people is a bit slower through the ranks from, you know, starting to junior to midweight and senior?
Yeah, definitely. I think just from my own experience, particularly with the juniors, we do have a really wide sort of diverse range of people. But looking up and looking forward, I can't really see that right now.
Okay. Well, we'll talk a bit more about that in a sec, but what I wanted to do was really get into the nuts and bolts of the Changing the Face project itself. I've obviously mentioned it at the start, but for those not aware of it, could you just describe what the project is?
Yeah, so Changing the Face is an initiative that aims to accurately represent diversity in advertising through data. Essentially, we're letting agencies create the face of their agency.
Yeah, so I think for us, we launched with the face of advertising, which was created by compositing headshots of 62 executive creative directors from across Australia. And then we sort of formed that one face. And then we formed that face to create the face of advertising. But that was really just to sort of start the conversation and kick off the initiative.
And it's got to be a winner because it's got the two keywords, diversity and data. Surely, yeah. It's got to be a win. But how did it actually come about? Because I know JK, Jonathan Kneebone at the Glue Society, was quite closely involved. Was he the mentor or he set the brief, didn't he?
Yeah, so it was actually, it was in 2017, so it was a few years ago now, but DNAD, Rare and the Glue Society hosted a competition. So it was for 30 young creatives across Australia and New Zealand. And it was just a sort of a one-day intensive. So in the morning we were given a brief and then in the afternoon it was sort of ready to go to broadcast. So just a good opportunity for something to put in your folio. And then on the day we were sort of part of the winning idea and JK sort of loved the idea so much, he agreed to bring it to life. So we've sort of held him to that.
Yeah, he's a legend, isn't he? I suppose when someone like JK says, look, I love this, I want to make it, he's thrown the weight of the Glue Society behind it. That's obviously an exciting and good thing.
Absolutely.
And then in terms of other people that have been involved along the way, the legendary headhunter and coach, Esther Clarahan, has been a very vocal supporter anyway. What has that meant to you, to have Esther's support?
Yeah, we've received a lot of support from people in the industry, and especially Esther has been really great to have her on board. She brings such a wealth of experience, and she has really unique ways of seeing the world, especially during the launch event. She shared quite an interesting thought about why the industry isn't as diverse, which I'm not going to repeat now because I wouldn't do it justice.
Oh, go on.
You were there during the event,
I was,
right?
I'm just trying to remember what it was, that particular thing.
So,
can we touch on it? No.
Yeah, sure. So when Esther started in the industry, she sort of didn't really notice the lack of women, particularly in senior positions. I think when she started, there was sort of an equal sort of mix of both. And then sort of throughout in the last 20 years, she sort of looked back and reflected and noticed that those women are sort of no longer there.
Have fallen away.
And she sort of believes that it comes down to awards and I guess our
attitude towards winning awards. And men can be a bit hungrier when it comes to that, whereas women kind of... Mm. I mean, that's her...
Yeah, so men are a bit more award obsessed and therefore driven these careers based on these awards and females have not been so award obsessed.
Yeah. Which was an interesting...
I don't know if it's true, but it's interesting.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it was interesting for us because we're still very new to the industry, but we didn't really realise that there used to be a lot of females in senior positions 50, 60 years
ago. It's interesting, especially when you talk about the fact that you look out there and there's not, and I know there are some amazing females in senior positions, but there's nowhere near as many as there should be.
Yeah, definitely. I think in 2017, when we were given this brief, there actually was no female ECDs. And in three short years, you know, we've seen a lot of growth, which is fantastic. And there's, but I still think that, yeah, the conversation isn't over and there's still a long way to go.
Yeah, and that's how our idea started, because we looked around and there were no female ECDs. Tara Ford was the first one, but that came a year later. So we wanted to reflect the diversity of that industry at that point in time, where there were no women, and we wanted to just create this one face of advertising to show them.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about that a bit, because you obviously, this was the project, at the heart of the project was this composite face of these ECDs, creative leaders in Australia. And when you put that all together with the data and your tool, it kind of, it ended up being a 35-year-old sort of white male is what the face looked like, which came as sort of no surprise to probably most people. So, I mean, was that the point of it, that we would sort of put a line in the sand, or sort of a marker in the sand, and say this is where we are now, and then sort of over the years we'll revisit and sort of map the change?
Yeah, I think whilst we sort of all know that, like, the diversity issue isn't new by any means, but I think for us we're quite visual beings, and it's one thing to sort of know the stats, but it's another one to actually see it and to see it sort of face first. So
quite confronting, isn't it?
It was quite confronting. I think 62 participating ECDs is amazing, and I think it's great that they sort of jumped on board and want to be part of the change. We want to start where the issue was most pronounced, but in phase two we want to open it up, because, well, we know that diversity is much more than just gender, and the issue is industry wide. It's not just in senior positions.
We're opening it up to age, gender, ethnicity, and disability. Even though the face doesn't really portray that along the way, our initiative is going to focus more on that.
Yeah, and what the other thing you've done is you started out with ECDs and mapping the face of ECDs, but you've sort of broadened it out to really mapping the face of the whole industry and people that are working in all the different levels.
Yeah, I think that's the beauty of this idea, is that we want it to be a tool that anyone can use. So whilst we started where the issue is most pronounced, we're now opening it up to entire agencies. And the idea is that you can have a snapshot of your agency. So in 2019, you can see the face of Ogilvy, or the face of
Wunderman Thompson.
Yeah.
The face of Clemenger. And then the year after that, you can see how you've progressed, because it captures your workforce every year.
Yeah, so you can kind of see that progression and see that change, which we think will be quite powerful.
And have you had a lot of the main agencies getting involved?
Yeah, I think in terms of the original submission, like, we were sort of overwhelmed by the amount of participants that we got, and they're sort of all aware of it. So now we're just sort of pushing it out and trying to get as many people from each agency to participate. So the key for us is to try and for it to truly reflect that agency. So we need to get sort of a large participation from each agency.
Yeah, and I mean, the question that threw up for me as I was thinking about that was, I wondered if you'd have some agency leaders who were worried about getting involved, about posting their agency's current face, because they felt they weren't diverse enough, and would they be worried that, you know, that would make them look like they, you know, they weren't up to speed with the conversation? Have you had any of that sort of feedback?
We understand that in the first year we don't expect agencies to be where they want to be. We're all in the same boat. We're still lacking in a lot of aspects, but the beauty of this project, like Ava said, is we're working together towards a common purpose.
So what I wanted to say is, I've obviously been into Ogilvy to chat with you ladies, and obviously beyond you two, there's a kind of a broad, really passionate team working on this and pushing it forward. There's the tech side of things, the broader conversation, and all those people at Ogilvy, so including, obviously not limited to, but including Gavin McLeod, the ECD. I know Jenny Mack is a CD on the project. There's Jen Gledhill, who's the suit on the project. Olivia Chamberlain, Susie McKeown, these are some of the people I've met, but I'm sure there's more. What has it meant to you to have such a strong backing from Ogilvy, from your agency?
Yeah, I think for us, I mean, we're just super overwhelmed. It was 3 years ago, and it was at Brief to Broadcast with JK, and we sort of, whilst we knew that this idea was strong, we sort of didn't realise how much work and support we would need to bring it to life. We presented the idea internally at Ogilvy, and they sort of were really passionate about the idea and jumped on as our production partners, which was really exciting. And then we also presented the idea to Microsoft, who agreed to sort of host and oh, sorry,
host and support the technology. And AdNews has become our production. AdNews has become our media partner, and they've been really integral to getting people to participate, which has been great.
Mm. So yeah, just like all those different, for us anyway, just being new, we haven't really worked on a project this big and with so many different parties. So it's so awesome that we can kind of all work together. And I think everyone's passionate about the idea, yourself included. So it's great that these sort of things can happen and we all will solve the issue together.
And that all sounds super positive, and you know, I'm a big supporter of the idea and the initiative. Having said that, do you think there is more that network agencies, or not only the agencies actually, the Ogilvy, other agencies, the bigger organisations in the industry could be doing? For example, a few people have come onto the podcast in the past and said, God, the amount of money that people spend on awards, for example, just one thing that, you know, people moan about. That's a whole other debate, but could agencies be spending more of their budgets and their time on initiatives like this, do you think?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I mean, for us, we can only speak for what we know, but I think a lot of agencies are doing things and certain programs behind the scenes that we sort of might not be aware of. I know at Ogilvy we're doing the unconscious bias training. We've got female leadership training. We're sort of in changing our parental leave and flexible hours and things like that. And in WPP, I think Steady last year came up with the, was it 2021, gender sort of 50-50 split in senior management. So I know there's definitely programs, and I'm sure that's coming from all agencies, big agencies. There's programs definitely coming through. So I think for us, it's just keeping that momentum going and keep the conversation going. And I think we're all sort of we're facing the right direction. We've just got to start walking.
I agree. Yeah. I think there's agencies like Ogilvy and people, great people like Steady, that are kind of having these big initiatives and these, you know, in the headlines talking about these great things. And then there's a bunch of just smaller things that sometimes go under the radar or just more every day, and they're just as important.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I think for us anyway, the best thing we can do is just start talking about it and raise awareness, and then, I'm not sure we've got the answer, but
one thing, whether you've got the answer or not, I don't think is important. It's more like, are we having the conversation?
But, yeah.
One of the, probably my favourite thing about the Change in the Face initiative is that it's not just a one hit, there we go, and it's done. I really like the idea that it's an ongoing project that maps the shape of the industry, the face of the industry, that could go on for the next 10 years. Was that your intention right from the start, or is that something that you've built into?
Yeah, it was our intention from the beginning, because we know that agencies aren't where they want to be, and they all have big plans, and they're all working towards a common goal. So we think that Changing the Face will help them get there, or at least be able to reflect on how they're doing.
And I think, change, it doesn't happen overnight. And whilst sort of the face was very powerful and it did start a conversation, our hope is that the actual website will work as that tool. So, it really does drive them year on year. And I think it's something to be proud of. I think we should be able to recognise that whilst we're not where we need to be today, let's all just, like, get started and hopefully, you know, each year we improve.
It did give, I must admit, it did give, I did have mixed feelings about the result, because I was involved in the, or I was one of the faces of the original, the initial ECD thing. And how many people did you have in that original face? Was it about 30 or 60?
Yeah, 62.
Right
across Australia, which was awesome.
and I didn't see myself in it, you know. And that was quite sobering, you know, to be faced with that. Okay, this is where we are. It's very much like this. And I'd love for over the years, you know, as quickly as possible, hopefully it won't need to take 10 years, for that face to really change and for us to say, wow, you know, we can see it changing.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, some of the gender thing coming through, some of the people of colour sort of making more impact on the face. It's an awesome thing to be able to track that, and hopefully we can kind of see it changing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think for us it was pretty cool, because originally sort of we did just want to composite that face and show, you know, what that one face of advertising looks like. But using Microsoft Microsoft's Azure AI technology was really cool for us, because, I personally have never used it before, but it sort of scanned this final image and, yeah, like you said, picked up on different things. So it detected that this image was a 35-year-old male, Caucasian, blue eyes with grey hair. And so you automatically are kind of like piecing this together, and you're sort of, you're imagining.
All we need is a name.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, when I looked at the list of ECDs that participated, the most common name is Simon. Simon.
Yeah. Are there more Simon ECDs called Simon than there are female ECDs? Probably are.
Yeah, actually.
It's scary, isn't it?
There are four or five Simons. Sorry to all the Simons out there.
Yeah, scary. Just sort of changing tack a bit, do you sometimes worry that you might seem like you're on a bit of a soapbox telling agencies how they should build their teams? You know, I sometimes worry about with this podcast, is it a bit of an echo chamber where everyone agrees and we're all kind of talking in this eastern suburbs bubble, and outside of the bubble, maybe people just don't buy into the diversity is better for culture and business argument?
Yeah, I think we got this brief 3 years ago, and I think it's still just as relevant today. And our hope, I guess, is that it's not as relevant in the next 3 years. So I don't think we're worried. I think there is a problem.
I feel like we're not telling agencies how to build their teams. They know how to do that. They know what's best for their workplace. Mm-hmm. And one agency and another agency will have a completely different goal in mind. Changing the face is just helping them reach that goal, whatever it is. If you want to have a 20% increase in people of color in your leadership position, or an increase in people over 45 in your creative department, that's your prerogative, and we're going to support you along the way. I personally don't think we're telling them how to do it. We're just assisting them.
Yeah. Mm. And what do you think, because you've kind of gone into your personal, where your heads are at, do you... what do you think, in your point of view, is the right way to go forward? Do you agree with this, the quotas of we should up leadership, female leadership by 20%, we should have more people, you know, 17% more people of colour? Do you think that's the way to go, or do you think it's more of a, would you prefer a more ground up movement that's less kind of here are the rules, everyone must follow them?
Like I said before, like, it's not, we don't have like an answer for that, because Ogilvy will have a very different answer to Clemenger or to the Monkees. For WPP, they think that 50-50 gender split amongst leadership positions is a good thing. And they probably worked out some numbers and understood that that's what's best for business and for creativity. So that's what we know. But there is no cure-all. There's no panacea for this.
Mm. But putting that aside, putting what Ogilvy think and what WPP's policy and all of that stuff, like, what do you personally think? Like, I'll give you my personal point of view. Yeah. Agree or disagree, I don't like quotas. I don't like the idea that I would ever be in a role because someone somewhere said, oh, we need to have 27% people of colour in leadership positions. And whether that was the reason I was there or not, that would always be in my mind, and that would make me feel insecure and shitty and, you know, bad that someone else that was, could have been better at the job got the job instead of them. So but having said that, I also kind of think if we don't have these targets, then we're never going to kind of get the step change we need. So it's a tricky one.
I mean ideally it would be great if it came from the ground up, and like I said before, I think we do have a really nice diverse range of talent in junior positions. So, you know, right now I think our job is to nurture that and bring that up with us. Quotas, for me personally, I think it's an agency to agency thing, but I personally don't agree with them. I don't think, to your point, it wouldn't feel nice knowing that you're only there because you're a female, or you're only there because you're a person.
You would never
of colour.
Know it was only because of that or not, yeah. would you? But it would play on your mind.
I think as well, you want the best person for the job.
I think the thing about the more diverse junior intake is really important, because that means that as this more diverse range of juniors come through and progress through the industry, then gradually, you know, the rest of the industry will become more diverse. There'll be more females and people of colour and everything else.
Definitely. And I think as well, you know, award school and I studied advertising at uni, and I did see a diverse sort of range of people. So I think a lot of people don't know what advertising is, but as we raise awareness of that and get raise awareness of it, I think hopefully we can get more sort of diverse people coming through the junior ranks and building our way up.
And what about, as we think about that, what would you say are the things or the systems or the people, the barriers basically that are stopping that progress from happening, that change? What do you think are the barriers that are stopping that face of advertising going from where it is now, the 35-year-old white guy called Simon, to something more interesting and diverse?
I think it's no surprise that the answer is unconscious bias. I think a lot of people have spoken about it. I know you've spoken a lot about it in your previous podcasts. But it is still a thing. And even if we talk about it now and we say unconscious bias is, you know, the reason why a lot of people don't get hired, it's unconscious for a reason. So we bring it up, but then when you're seated in front of someone you're interviewing and you go, I'm not really hitting it off with this person, and you can't really quite put a finger on it, maybe it's because they're very different to you. And then you're just dismissing them as, oh, it's not the right fit. Even though they might be the right fit, they're just very different. They look different, they sound different, they come from a different background. So it's just keeping that conversation going and making sure that people know this is why things are the way they are.
Yeah, and did you say that's something that Ogilvy, as an agency, everyone's undertaking the unconscious bias training?
Yeah, in senior management, they're doing that, which I think is a really good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a good, I might have mentioned it before, I can't remember, there was a good thing that came from the London Philharmonic Orchestra. Does this ring a bell? Where they basically, people used to come on and play, like audition to be in the orchestra, but they could hear, it'd be behind a curtain, but they would hear shoes, they could tell from the shoes whether it was female or male. So now everyone that comes on just has to go barefoot and then play, so you can't, the judges can't tell whether it's male or female. Wow. They can just judge it on the music.
Wow.
Yeah, it's cool, isn't it? And then I just wanted to get a bit more, even a bit more personal. So why are you two so passionate about contributing to the solution for this lack of diversity in advertising, Australian advertising? Is it because of your backgrounds? Is it because of your age and your generation? Is it because you kind of you see a longevity in the industry and you want it to be a more diverse industry? Why is it for you two?
Yeah, for me personally, we are young creatives. We're relatively new to the industry, and we're going to be in this industry for quite a bit. So we want to make sure that the industry that we're in is going to be nurturing for us and also for the next generation of creatives.
It should be us.
Yeah. And you two, because you're not a team, are you? But you've both got, you're both in teams, so you've both got art directors. Are they male, female, old, young? What's the deal with that?
So I've had two art directors. Previously, my art director was female, and she is British and Pakistani and Indian descent. At the moment, my creative director... Why do I keep saying creative director? At the moment, my art director is half Malaysian and half Australian. His name's Simon, so shout out to Simon if you're listening to this.
Simon's it, yeah.
You'll be in ECD one day. It's in the statistics.
Stick with me, yeah.
Yeah, and it's been really eye-opening working with a girl and a guy. It's very different, which I love. They both bring different things to the table. And Ava has a beautiful art director.
Yes.
Simon as well? Simone?
No, her name's Shada. and we both moved up from Melbourne together, which has been really great. She's similar age, 25, and she is half Maori and half Turkish, but grew up in Melbourne. And yeah, we met through uni through the advertising course. So,
How's it been to be an all-female team in advertising? Am I just sort of pointing out something that's just not even a thing anymore? Is it just, why are you going on about that? Or is there sort of a difference in them?
You're still branded as a female team. When I was with Farah, I was a female creative team. And that was made very apparent, not in a bad way, not in a good way. It's just female team.
It sucks though, doesn't it? It's kind of stereotyping.
But you're in one now. What is that? Is that like?
In some way, I think it's worked to our advantage. I think being a young female creative team, I think it's given us some opportunities, even getting the work up here. And then I also think, do we get jobs because we're female creatives?
Yeah. It's hard to notice it, because even when I was with my female art director, yes, I knew we were a female creative team, but because I didn't really have a frame of reference of working with a guy, I didn't know that that's what we were labeled as. And then, or at least I wasn't super aware. And then when I had a guy, I was like, oh, okay, so we're working on different clients now. We're being seen as a team, because nobody ever talks to us like we're a mixed gender team. There is no such a thing as a mixed team. Or maybe there is, but they don't really talk about it. But there are teams, there are female teams. I was just very aware that I was one of those.
Yeah, it's interesting that Ava, you before mentioned opportunities that you might get or might not get, because, I mean, like it or not, the reality is you wouldn't really want to be a Caucasian mid-40s creative director in today's day. It just seems unfair, which is, some of my best friends are these amazingly talented, brilliant experienced white guys, but suddenly, oh, that's not the flavour, because diversity, and we need to, you know, all the stuff we talked about before, quotas and agendas and making the right kind of hires, politics that come into it. It seems unfair to me in a way that colour or gender or anything else should even come into it, but it does.
Yeah.
What about, because I've come across people who strongly believe that diversity and multiculturalism are not a good thing. I've mentioned before on the podcast that one of my former heroes, not anymore, Morrissey from the Smiths, he's just kind of over the last 10 years just turned into this, sort of gone from this guy with interesting opinions to this sort of raging racist, basically, who kind of thinks that multiculturalism is watering down of these unique cultures and everyone loses. What would you say to those sorts of people who just don't believe in multiculturalism as a way to create better work?
Well, in the advertising industry, diversity is just the first step. The second step is inclusivity, which is equally as important. It's not enough to just get diverse people in your agency. We also need to nurture that diversity, because if you hire two Peruvians, you have to let them be Peruvian. If you hire a Korean, you have to let them be Korean. You can't force them to be in the mold. Because I'm not Australian, and I'll never be Australian. And I'm lucky enough to have people around me who understand that and know that when I brainstorm with them or when I talk to them, I'm going to think about things in a completely different way. And hopefully it's a good thing. But the work that I produce might have that twang where it's just a bit different.
Yeah, yeah. How does that come out? That Indonesian, you know, that Indonesian part of you, or that all of you, I guess. Yeah. How does it come out in the work?
So I went to an international school, so I feel like I'm quite more globalized, because I consume a lot of American media or European media. I had friends from all over the world growing up. I also am Indonesian Chinese. I lived in Singapore for a bit, and then I moved to Melbourne when I was 16. So I've had all these different experiences, and I've met people from so many different walks of life, and I'm very grateful for that. So when I do work on projects and I see insights and when I work on different projects, I can have insights that many people might not have the privilege to experience. And that's when sometimes we crack an idea, is because of that one thing that happened 4 years ago when I was here. And my art director, who's half Malaysian and half Australian, he also went to an international school and he moved around quite a bit. So as a team, we sometimes approach things in a very different way, which we realize that creative directors do recognize as well. So that's quite nice.
Yeah, and I think we have to nurture that, and then, because they're asked, what's the point in hiring them? You've got to let them be unique and bring those different ideas to the table. If we are trying to make everyone the same, then what's the point?
And just, you touched on there, Jasmine, points of view and perspectives and things from your past or your culture or different experiences that you've had. What are for you two, what are your inspirations, both in the ad industry and also maybe even more importantly outside of it?
I think people, for sure. I think people. I think you know, whether it's your friends or your family or even just sitting on the train and there's that person next to you that's like super loud and obnoxious, but you're just listening to what they're talking about. I think you pick
up, making a mental note. Use that somewhere.
You're
in the
like
script
or, yes. just write notes in your phone and just little quirky insights or phrases or little things that your friends do. I think that's what inspires me the most.
I personally really like people in advertising, especially creatives, who can't turn that creativity on and off. They're just always on. They go to work and they have the privilege of being creative and getting paid to do it, but then when they clock out, they're still making music, or they're making films, they're dancing, or they're writing, they're making art, and they have this like insatiable need to express themselves, and no other industry has that much talent. So I really, really love just meeting people, meeting new people in the industry and knowing what they do outside of work. It's inspired me to do more things as well.
Yeah, it's great. It is inspiring. And what about heroes? Do you have heroes? Is that a thing in the world of the junior creative, or is that old fashioned?
I
don't know, maybe it's just me with bands and film stars and that kind of thing. Maybe it's just not a thing anymore.
I mean, heroes in work for us, well, for me personally, I think Jenny Mack, who you mentioned earlier, who's been working on this project, she was, she is my first female creative director that I've ever worked with. And I think it's just, she's kick ass and it's just awesome. Just learning off her and getting that experience and just having that mentorship. I think, I mean, I'm very fortunate to have that so young. She's definitely my inspiration.
I mean, what about in terms of diversity as well? Because one of the things, when I think about things that inspire me, I think Adam Goods, for example, is amazing. Not just because of what he's done in the game and what he's put up with and his stuff as, you know, his work as Australian of the Year, but because people like that have sort of smash through walls, broken down barriers that enable another generation to kind of not even realise there's
normalized
a barrier there,
it.
You know, which is amazing. I saw recently, I don't know if you've ever seen the musical Matilda. Have you seen that? So good.
I haven't seen it. I've read the book, though. It's based on the book.
You've got to see the musical because it's, if you like the book, the musical is amazing. It's got lyrics by Tim Minchin. It's brilliant. But there's been many different versions of Matilda in New York on Broadway and in London. And, God, that show, that Tim Minchin version's been going for about 7 years, 7 or 8 years. And only recently, it's about a year ago, was their cast, a little black girl was played Matilda, and there was a lot of uproar about it. And she must have been under a lot of pressure because this is like kind of a 9, 10-year-old girl. And she just kind of blew everyone away because she just smashed it, and she was amazing. You should look it up on YouTube. She's amazing, and she's amazing because no one could kind of go, oh, she was amazing for a black girl, or oh, she did kind of did it right. She was just amazing, full stop. You know, regardless of the colour of her skin, and she's like a 10-year-old girl. So for me, that was kind of a heroic effort as well of smashing through barriers.
Yeah. Well, actually, just recently, a few days ago, we met T. Uglow from Google. And she was just amazing. I think, talking about breaking down walls and barriers, I think she's incredible.
Very brave.
Yeah, very, Yeah, I think we sort of presented the idea to her, and she's really passionate about it, which was, I think, more just a fangirl moment, if anything, for Jasmine and myself.
And beyond, we've talked a bit about changing the face. What about other work that you've done so far in your careers? I know you're kind of near the start of your careers, but you've been at Ogilvy, you've worked on some big stuff. What's your favourite piece of work that you've done to date, whether it's been produced or not? Actually,
I think my first ever commercial we did for Uncle Toby's, and it was really great. It was sort of the new brand platform for that year. And we found three Australians who were sort of growing up in Australia, but growing up a little bit differently. I think in the past, Uncle Toby's has been very much like the blonde hair swimmer. But we sort of wanted to push down those barriers. And we found three real stories. So we found a gymnast, we found a scientist, and a...
circus performer.
Yeah, and a circus performer. And that was just cool. It was like three completely different people all doing their own thing. And we sort of told their story in three spots, and yeah, it was just cool to do. Yeah.
And for me, my favorite piece of work is still a work in progress. Can't really talk about it, but a little bit of backstory. My art director Simon and our behavioral scientist Dane and I flew down to Melbourne.
Hold on. What Ogilvy's behavioural scientist?
Yeah. There is
it's a good job title.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't
I know.
The behavioural science department.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Yeah, yep. You went down. Sorry, I interrupted. You went to.
We went to Melbourne to compete in the Open Innovation Competition. So Melbourne released this brief, and it was essentially to create a safer city for women. And it was really appropriate because in 2019, in the beginning of the year, three women were killed on their way home. So they wanted to really improve the city.
Yeah.
And this brief was open to everyone. So we were competing against, when we made the shortlist, we were competing against a lot of tech startups, a lot of people who already have prototypes. So we won second place when we pitched our idea. And they decided that they liked the idea so much they wanted to help fund
it. Brilliant. It's amazing.
Yeah. So we're currently in the middle of making it. Hopefully in the next couple of months or a few months, we'll see it come to light. And hopefully it's going to extend beyond just Melbourne.
Okay. I can't wait to, you can tell us more. Yeah, sounds good. Okay. And then what about work that you see out there, whether it's Australia or globally, work that just really inspires you, maybe from the past or even from this year, well, not this year, but recently? What are the bits of work that you kind of look at and go, wow, wish I'd done that?
Have you seen the VML line art, the Poland, was the last ever issue?
I have, yeah.
Oh, so cool. Yeah.
Really good.
So they bought the porn mag and then sort of amazing. Fixed it and then killed it. But I think...
Just to explain that idea a bit for anyone who hasn't seen it, that was like a kind of a chat gossip magazine that was more like a kind of a porn magazine, really, wasn't it? And they bought the magazine and then did the last edition.
So Poland scored 10 points below the EU average, and so they pretty much just revamped it. They got all these kick-ass women in there doing all sorts of different work from different fields, and what's the most amazing is that magazine was the best performing in 10 years, so it was just killer.
And for me, I really like brands that consistently do good work, and one of them is Nike. I just love how they're always pushing the boundaries and always creating a splash, and a lot of brands just do one headline-worthy campaign a year or every couple of years, and for them it's like a big thing to cast a black family or an Asian family in their ads. But with Nike, because they do it so often, you don't really bat an eye when you see an ad full of people of color, because it's just normal. And they've managed to normalize diversity and normalize doing new things. So I really, really like that.
I think the other thing about Nike is they've just, and Whedon and Kennedy, is they've just set the bar so high. And then every year they just kind of, again, seem to kind of smash it out of the park.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive. What about, I talked right at the start about the fact that you ladies are obviously closer to the beginning of your careers. You've got a long way to go in your careers. Most of the other, or all of the other guests actually we've had on have been kind of ECDs or CDs or more sort of business leaders. So it's been awesome to get a contrasting perspective from you two. What would your what would your message be to the leaders out there that are listening to this?
Just do it. Speaking of Nike.
Dream crazy.
Dream crazy. Nothing is impossible.
Yeah, just hire different kinds of people. Like Jez said, you might not hit it off with someone, but maybe that's a good thing. And then probably a bit of a shameless plug, but if you've an ECD or... if you want to go onto our website at www.changingtheface.com.au and get your agency on board to submit their data, that would be awesome. We plan to release the results later this year.
Yeah, there's still time, isn't there, to go on to changingtheface.com.au? People should go on there and agency leaders should just make sure that all the people in their teams, not just creative teams either, is it? The whole agency should upload your data.
Yeah. Creative
and then
agencies.
When will the, I know you're still sort of working on the details of how that sort of comes to life and what it looks like, but when roughly will that be released into the world?
We're hoping about April.
Okay, great. And then finally, you probably know that I always ask guests to leave us with a little nugget of wisdom or a quote or an anecdote or a funny story or an inspiring story or a thought. Have you got one, or two for the price of one today?
So a wise little pig who answers to the name of Piglet once said, "The things that make me different are the things that make me me." So I think we should do Piglet proud and not shy away from our difference, but rather I think we should all embrace it.
Love it.
What she said.
You having that one, or are you going to give us a separate one?
Piglet's perfect. I can't beat that one.
We need the poo, maybe.
Okay. I'll find an Eeyore quote and come back to you.
Yeah, that is all good. Thank you so much, ladies, for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
It's been awesome.
It's been fun.
Thank you.
Cheers. And before I go, just one more thing. Don't forget to book your tickets for the B&T Changing the Ratio conference. Go to changingtheratio.com.au and use the code BROWNRIOT to get 20% off. I look forward to meeting you all there. Come on, if you can do a week drinking rosé in Cannes, you can definitely do a day to push the industry forward. Okay, thank you to you for listening, and thank you to the guys at Smith & Weston for pulling this together. Dan and Nick here are absolute legends in sound. From creating original music tracks, stings and sound effects to recording VOs, radio commercials and podcasts. They're master craftsmen, an absolute joy to work with and genuine supporters of positive steps in the industry. So please keep them in mind for all your sound requirements. Thanks again, until next time.